Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jonathan Mayo. Jim Callis is on a vacation far away, which if you've ever heard Jim's ringtone, you will know why I say that. Jonathan has heard it many times in mid-conversation. And we will also have a special guest on the show, one of the best, if not the best, draft prospect in the 2022 class. Tamar Johnson is going to join us on today's show. And we may have a little surprise for Tamar as well. We're a little later, we'll talk about some breakout prospects from the 2021 season. We did a story back in January predicting who might break out in 2021. And now we're going to look back and see how those predictions panned out. And in cases where the guy was not the breakout prospect for his team, we'll take a look at who was. And then we'll wrap up, as we always do, by answering a question from the mailbag. So, Jonathan, we've been teasing the top 100 draft prospects list for the past couple of weeks. You and Jim have been working on this for months now. And really, that goes back, you know, even farther than just the past couple of months, you know, seeing these guys play. But really have been digging into the list over the past couple of months. It's finally out. You can see it at MLB.com/pipeline. And for me, this is a really, really fun list. Starting at the top, you have Drew Jones, who, yes, is Andrew Jones Jr., son of the 10-time Gold Glover, Braves legend, and from the looks of things, is a very similar player. Exceptional defensive player, and just has some incredible tools all across the board. He's at the top, followed by Tamar Johnson, who's going to join us here in just a little bit, who Jim Callis has been fond of asking the question, is he the best high school hitting prospect in decades? He may be. We have Elijah Green at number three, who, you know, talking about the tools on Drew Jones, Elijah Green can almost match him in terms of having those exceptional tools across the board. I think probably one of the best athletes we've seen at the top of a draft class in a while. He is followed by Jacob Berry at number four, third baseman from LSU. Brooks Lee is number five, a shortstop from Cal Poly. Jace Young, the younger brother of Josh Young, is second baseman at Texas Tech. Brock Jones, outfielder from Stanford, is number seven. Chase DeLauder, outfielder from James Madison, is number eight. Dylan Lesko is the first pitcher on the list. High school right-hander out of Buford, Georgia, he's number nine. And rounding out the top 10 is Gavin Cross, an outfielder from Virginia Tech. Like I said, to me, a very exciting list, especially those first three names at the top. Just some exceptional high school hitters there.
Yeah, and there's not that much separating any of them. I was going to jokingly call into question that you were calling into question the order by teasing at the top that Tamar Johnson might be the best player and we have him at number two. But I really think that we could have lined up the top three in any order, but particularly the top two in Drew Jones and Tamar Johnson. And the only reason I think that Jones is ahead of Johnson is because of the position, right? He's a center fielder. He's going to play center field for the entirety of his career, I would think. You know, has a chance to add some more gold gloves to the Jones family shelf. And Tamar Johnson is probably going to be a second baseman. Now, I think he has a chance to be a very good second baseman. I know that he, you know, loves playing shortstop, but most people don't see him playing shortstop at the next level. And I think that is the only thing that really separates them. You know, Tamar Johnson, he's such a special hitter, as you alluded to, that made it very close. I mean, I can't remember ever having a high school second baseman ranked highly. Now, he played shortstop in high school, you know, but he's played second at a lot of showcase events and things like that. And then Elijah Green, who probably has the highest ceiling, mostly because the his power is absolutely ridiculous, but it comes with a little bit of swing and miss. And there are some concerns from some scouts. You know, I think if he goes out in the spring and hits, then those questions will be answered. He's at IMG Academy in Florida, so he's going to face good competition. You know, I think that, you know, Drew Jones has a higher floor. I think there's a little more certainty. Elijah Green's ceiling is probably higher. You know, if it all clicks, his raw power is so ridiculous that we're looking at a guy who's, you know, not only can run and play, you know, plus defense, but, you know, could hit 30, 40 homers a year. So, you know, and then you have the college bats all in a row after that. And, you know, the biggest thing, I think, just looking at the top 10, is the fact that, you know, what you said, that Dylan Lesko is the first pitcher on this list. And he's a high school right-hander, which is that, you know, that part of the draft class that is always deemed the most risky. So it's very bat heavy. You know, the college arms that you usually look for, there are a bunch of question marks. There have been some injuries to some of the top guys. Some of those guys will undoubtedly filter up as we move ahead here. You know, this canon will change, but right now I don't remember having three high school guys this exciting at the top of a draft list at this point in time.
Yeah, let's talk about these three just a little bit more. So starting with Drew Jones, you talked about how Tamar Johnson likes to play shortstop, played shortstop in high school. Drew Jones, also an exceptional shortstop, a guy who has played shortstop, and scouts say that they've, you know, watched him take infield, and he has the tools and actions to be fine at shortstop as well, but he's just so good in the outfield that's where he's going to be. His tools, you're talking about Elijah Green and Drew Jones, their tools. Drew Jones with a 55 hit tool, Elijah Green with a 50 hit tool, and I think that's probably where that separation between the two comes in for the most part, because they both have 60 power. Both have 70 run tools. Jones with a slightly better arm in terms of our tool grades at 65 compared to Green's 60. While Green is a 60 fielder and Jones a 70 fielder. So you can see a little separation in the arm and the fielding tools. But I think that the hit tool there, the difference there is probably the biggest factor in the separation between the two.
Right. And you know, this isn't scientific, you know, this is, you know, Jim and I kind of in a conglomeration of talking to a lot of different scouts, putting together these grades, and even the grades that the scouts put on them, they're going to differ, you know. Could you have given Elijah Green a higher power tool? Yes. I think I hedged very slightly just because of that, the small question about the hit tool. Well, will he get to the power? So it's, you get to splitting hairs a little bit with some of the grades. So there really is very little separating them. And they're like, this class is just, there are a lot of really exciting, not just at the top, but like throughout, very toolsy high school, you know, guys who can play up the middle. And, you know, Drew Jones, if he weren't that good at center field, it's kind of the opposite. You know, often you have a guy who starts at short and you're like, oh, but he's so athletic and maybe the arm's a little bit shy and he doesn't have good infield actions. Let's throw him out in center field, sort of the Adam Jones sort of path. And Adam Jones was a shortstop all through the minor leagues, right up till when he got to the big leagues. And then he got moved out to center field and ended up being a very good center fielder. But I, you know, I would be tempted, you know, to have Drew Jones play shortstop, because you know, that's hard to find too. But, you know, he's going to be up the middle anyway. I was talking to a scout who runs a, you know, a scout team in Florida that he played on, and Drew Jones actually played a game at third base, you know, and looked absolutely comfortable there. So it would be interesting to sort of reverse that, but I think he's, like, as you said, he's so good in the outfield and in center that you don't I don't think you mess with that, but it would be interesting to see him try it out at the next level.
And a little interesting nugget on him. The reason he did not play shortstop in high school was because.
Oh, because Jeff Blauser's kid is on the same team as him.
Right. Yeah. So Drew Jones, son of Andrew Jones, didn't play shortstop because the son of Jeff Blauser was playing there. And then Elijah Green is the son of former NFL Pro Bowl tight end Eric Green. And we talked about the difference in the hit tool between Jones and Green. And I think there's some question on Green's bat and being able to get to that massive raw power that you talked about because of the strikeout rate in high school, which for a high school hitter ranked this high, his strikeout rate, not something that you would normally see with a player ranked this high.
Right. And then, you know, and you can parse the data, you know, quite a bit. Jim and I spend probably too much time on synergy, which a lot of the teams use. And it's not even just strikeout rate. You know, you could look over the, all the different summer events to see what his, just what his swing and miss rate is on any given kind of pitch. Right. So does he struggle with breaking stuff? Does he still struggle with velocity 90 miles per hour or higher? And there were some signs where, you know, his whiff rate, was, you know, a little concerning, you know, with velocity up in the zone, that kind of thing. Not so much where, you know, you're splitting hairs and, you know, people need to keep in mind that when teams are considering taking a guy, number one, number two, three, whatever it is, you're really going to pick them apart, you know, in trying to find potential holes, because you want to be as sure as you possibly can. You know, like Bryce Harper was, you know, no doubt about it, in the number one pick in the 2010 draft. Like, everyone knew it, but the Washington Nationals and other teams picking it up were still picking him apart. Like, if you would have a conversation with a scout in a given day, you'd be like, wait, you're talking about Bryce Harper? I mean, like, so we're, you know, they're really going to dig in on Elijah Green. And I don't think it's such a concern where people think that he, you know, he's going to really struggle to hit. But they will be watching him very carefully in the spring, and he's going to face a lot of good pitching competition at IMG Academy. So they'll, you know, I think those questions will be as answered as questions can be about a high school player making the jump to the pro game before, you know, a team decides to take them in that, you know, the top 3 to 5 picks.
All right. We've talked about the top three on the list in detail. You talked a little bit about the college bats that come next. Dylan Lesko, the top pitching prospect on the list. Let's scroll down the list a bit more. And why don't you tell us about some of the guys on the list that are most intriguing to you? I know we've got Cam Collier at number 21, another MLB legacy. He reclassified to be in this year's draft. We've got on the other end of the spectrum, the oldest player on the list would be Kumar Rocker, who everyone knows, obviously, at this point. But a very interesting situation with him. He is number 31 on this year's list, which is a considerable drop from where he was last year. We have the youngest player on the list. Do you know who that is without looking?
It's got to be Walter Ford, right?
Walter Ford, the one 16-year-old on the list. He's number 36. And we have a switch pitcher, which I'm not sure I don't think we've ever had on a top 100 draft prospects list.
Well,
I
do think that a number of years ago, and I want to say it was Carlos Cortez when he was in high school, but I may be misremembering slightly, a guy who was able to throw with both hands and would do that. Played the outfield, played second base, but could pitch left-handed, but he wasn't specifically a switch pitcher. So let me start with that, because he's number 100 on our list. I got to sneak in a mention of him at the end of the network special, which I was glad. Gerangelo St. J. And I think he goes by Low, which is good.
Which is right. His last name is Cijntje.
Yeah, man. It's like if you have a triple word score, you're golden. I had to do some digging to make sure that I had his name correctly. We do, you know, voiceovers of the video, and he was dangerously close to one of those, you know, the old Tim McMaster trick, which was he does this, the pitcher does that. But I'm like, no, I'm gonna get it. So shout out to Darren Sutton, because I found because he pitched in the Perfect Game All American Classic, and so I got it from there. And then I actually talked to Lo St. Jay himself to make sure, and so we got it right. He's fascinating because he's a little undersized, so people aren't exactly sure what he is, but right-handed, he's mid 90s, like legit up to 95. Sits low 90s, throws a decent, a good sharp breaking ball. Left-handed, he's more like upper 80s, touching 90. So, but there's probably a little more in the tank just because he's a high schooler, can spin a breaking ball from the left side also. So he's a legitimate ambidextrous pitcher. I mean, he threw with both arms during that Perfect Game Classic. This is not just a sort of gimmick. I think he's, if I were a team taking him, I would give him every chance to do both. And, I think that if he goes on to Mississippi State, he'll get a chance to continue to do both. I think it's a legitimate weapon. And then the other guy that, that you brought up, I was going to talk about Walter Ford, because there are a few of these guys that have kind of reclassified. Ken Collier is one, and Walter Ford is another. And he was in Alabama, and then he went back to Pace High School in Florida, which is where he was originally from. He is the high school arm that I'm keeping a very close eye on, just because he's projectable. He's 6'2", 6'3". I think there's more in the tank, and he's already got a fastball that was up to 97, shorter stints in summer showcase circuit. He's got a really good low 80s slider. He's got some feel for a changeup. He's pretty athletic. He repeats his delivery. He's going to be really young. It's just that, scouts haven't really watched him that closely because they're focused so much on the next draft class. They saw him. He was on, all the showcase events. So he's going to be scouted very heavily in the spring. And I think that if his stuff keeps ticking up, he shows that he can maintain his stuff while throwing strikes. This is a guy who is going to move up this list in a hurry. He's at 36 right now. I don't think he's going to catch up to Dylan Lesko, but I think he could be a guy who fits into that first round. And, one of the things I think we've touched on, Jason, a little bit are, the models that teams have. All of them have some form of a computer model where a lot of data gets put in, from physical attributes to stuff to age, and sometimes I think it can be a detriment. A lot of teams, for instance, wouldn't take Brett Beatty now with the Mets because he was too old. Like, automatically would discount him. The fact that Walter Ford will only be 17 come draft time is going to work in his favor, assuming he checks off all those other boxes. So he's a real interesting one for me to watch.
All right. And let's quickly take a look at some of the top tools in this class. We already talked about the hit tool of Tamar Johnson. He's received a 70 grade for his hit tool, the first time that we've ever given out a 70 hit tool to someone on the draft, top 100 draft prospects list. We talked about the 70 run grades of Drew Jones and Elijah Green. They are at the top of that list, along with Gavin Turley, an outfielder from Hamilton High School in Arizona, as well as Justin Crawford, an outfielder from Bishop Gorman High School in Nevada. You could be familiar with both of those high schools. Bishop Gorman, that is... is that a baseball powerhouse, or have we just had some big names?
Oh, no, it's definitely a baseball powerhouse. But yes, I mean, there have been some big names. Joey Gallo is probably the one people are most familiar with right now. They are a powerhouse, and they constantly have good draft talent And to add to the we feel old because of the MLB bloodlines of guys that we remember, like I remember covering Andrew Jones, Justin Crawford is Carl Crawford's son. So just to add to that. And then you mentioned Hamilton High School from Arizona, which is, of course, where Cody Bellinger went to high school.
Right. So a lot of MLB blood running through those schools. In terms of the best arms on the list, we have a catcher, Logan Tanner from Mississippi State with a 70 grade arm, along with third baseman Nolan McLean of Oklahoma State. Nazir Mulay, a shortstop slash pitcher out of Passaic County Tech in New Jersey. And Adonis Guzman, another catcher out of Brunswick High School in Connecticut. And then we talked about the fielding grade of 70 of Drew Jones. He is the only player on the list with a 70 fielding grade. Pitchers, best fastballs on the list, Brock Porter, a right-handed pitcher from St. Mary's Prep in Michigan. Reggie Crawford, a left-handed pitcher out of UConn. Mulay, previously mentioned. Best curveball on the list belongs to Peyton Paulette of Arkansas. Have a few 70 grade sliders. Connor Prelip, also of Arkansas. Landon Sims, Mississippi State. And old friend Kumar Rocker. And then best changeup on the list, Dylan Lesko and Carson Wisenhunt of East Carolina with a 65 grade changeup. And then a bunch of guys with control grades of 55. Won't list all of them, but Jonathan, anyone in particular there that is specifically intriguing to you?
Yeah, I think there are sort of a few things to sort of pick out. Mulay, obviously you can see why he's listed as the one of the top arms. And I like, you know, that we have two catchers on there in Tanner and Guzman. Nolan McLean, the other 70 arm, is also a guy who, you know, has pitched in the past and has been up to 95. So you sort of seen it on the mound as well as position. I think in terms of the pitching grades, the two things stand out. One is Dylan Lesko. I don't remember ever having a high school pitcher having the top changeup in the class. You know, he's tied with Carson Wisenhunt from East Carolina, but that stood out. And then, you know, one of the things that's so, you know, interesting and hard to figure out is, you know, some of these guys who have the best grades in some of their pitches are the college arms, who many of whom have injury question marks, right? So you have from the fastball standpoint, Reggie Crawford, who's left-handed and could throw 100, but just had Tommy John surgery, so he's not going to throw a pitch for UConn this year. You've got Connor Prelip, who's got one of the best sliders at Arkansas, who had Tommy John surgery last spring, and maybe he'll be ready in time to pitch in, like, you know, some summer ball or the draft league or something like that. But you won't see much of him. Kumar Rocker, as we've talked about, unbelievable power stuff, but because of what happened with him and not signing with the Mets, there are going to be a lot of question marks about his health that will have to be answered. And even Landon Sims, who's got a ridiculous slider, he's healthy, but he is never started. People may remember him from being absolutely ridiculous as a shutdown closer for Mississippi State during their run last year. It's going to be fun to watch him and see how he does in making the transition to starting, but we don't know what that looks like because we haven't seen him do that really since high school.
All right, you're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk to the owner of the best hit tool on this list, that being Tamar Johnson. We'll do that next, right after this. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jonathan Mayo, and we are extremely pleased to have the number two prospect on the top 100 draft prospects list, Tamar Johnson. And Tamar, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Tamar, so we've been talking about this list for weeks now. Jonathan and Jim Callis have been working on it for, I would say, months. We saw you at the high school All-American game on All-Star Weekend. You put on an extremely impressive performance there. We're certainly on our radar from that point, but I know, you know, Jim and Jonathan, when they were putting this list together, and if you, I don't know if you got a chance to watch the show on MLB Network, but throughout the process of putting the list together, they were saying that, you know, at the top, these guys are interchangeable at the very top. And I know you and Drew Jones are close, and you were very close in the construction of this list at the top. I think you've been number one on some other lists. You guys have to have a pretty good little friendly competition here, don't you?
I mean, to be honest with you, not really. You know, me, Drew, and Elijah, you know, we all root for each other. I'm happy that Drew got the recognition he deserves. He definitely deserves it. He's worked really hard for it, and I'm glad he got it. You know, for us, we really just, you know, kind of root each other on. You know, we sometimes train with each other. Whenever somebody's down, we try to give them some, you know, some friendly advice. And, you know, that's just a good thing about us.
Now, I know you guys are close. And speaking of close, when I, you know, read about you, where you're from, what you're all about, everything I see, it seems like this is your experience is a big family experience. I read that your father, Terry, introduced you to T-ball when you were 3 years old. You have two older brothers who it sounds like are extremely involved in your baseball experience. Trevant, I believe your oldest brother is a coach. And a volunteer coach at Georgia Tech, where your other brother, Tervell, is on scholarship to play baseball. And it sounds like they're extremely involved in your experience with baseball. And then I read that your mom, Kim, you said that she's basically your rock.
Of course, she is.
Can you talk a little bit about how each of these members of your family have been involved in you getting to the point where you are now?
They've been a big part of me being where I am now. They always give me constructive criticism. You know, their word goes a long way. They're great role models. They just show me how to go about things the right way. And they've always been great. You know, they are the people that I trust. And they are the people that I look for whenever I'm down. And they're the people that always are there when I'm up. So I really appreciate, you know, Trevant, Tervell, even my other brother, Terrence, and my parents, my grandparents, my whole family, they're just the greatest support system I could ever have. And, you know, when you go into just stuff, you know, being away from home sometimes and, you know, not having the chance to see them as much, you know, they're still there. And I really appreciate them for being there and always being there for me.
You know, Tamar, we haven't been able to see you on the field that much. As Jason mentioned, you know, we did see you in Denver, and you said, you know, when you're up, you know, and when you're down, they're always there. Are you ever down? I mean, you had so much energy. Now, granted, that time in Denver was a really special time, and it was clearly a lot of fun. But from everything I've heard, there, you know, you always have that kind of energy on the field. Is that something that just comes naturally because you love playing so much? Like, where did that all come from?
For one, you know, it's kind of like my playground. Like I said, I love being on the field. I love playing baseball. And, you know, I'm always having a good attitude whenever I'm on the field because, you know, you never know when it's just the last day to ever play. So, you know, I just love being on the field. I always keep that smile because, you know, when you you're doing something you love, you can never be frowning about it. So it's really the thing with me. You know, the energy has always been there. You know, I tend to know if you have the energy, you know, guys around you tend to play better and they tend to attract to you. So that's always been the biggest thing for me. You got to be a better teammate and work together with the team in order to win. So that's been the thing with me.
One of the things, and I think during your visit with us on the MLB Network show, Greg Amsinger asked you about, and obviously people talk about your ability to hit, but was your power. And I will say, there is proof of this because you could go back and listen to the Home Run Derby broadcast. You were my pick to win the Derby just because I had been watching you take BP. Obviously, Home Run Derby is not a reflection of fair play baseball, but how much do you enjoy kind of surprising people? And I guess sort of the sort of second part of that is, and this is a question I love talking to guys who are sort of perceived as quote unquote being undersized, do you use that as motivation? And have you, throughout your life, or, maybe you were, now people know who you are, but there probably were times where you would show up the field and people probably thought that you weren't big enough, you weren't strong enough, whatever the enough was. How much do you use that to fuel what you do on the field?
For one, I like it. I'm aware that I'm not really I'm the strongest guy or the tallest guy on the field, but for me, it's something I just can't control. What I can control is my performance and how I go about everything that I do. So, I try to control that thing. So, it could be used as motivation, but at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter to me because at the end of the day, my success and the way I go about everything is going to be a reflection of who I am.
Hey, Tamar, so talked about your father introducing you to T-ball at the age of 3. I don't expect that you actually have many memories about that, but what are some of your first baseball memories? I'm kind of curious. Have you always been a left-handed hitter? Have you hit both ways, or when did you start hitting left-handed? Do you do anything else left-handed? I know you throw right-handed.
Yeah, of course. As far as I can remember, the first memory I have in my mind, I've always swung on the left-handed side. I've seen my brothers swing on the left-handed side, so I thought that was just the right way to hit. I had one brother who was right-handed, but I thought he was just hitting the wrong way. So I didn't really know. So, but I remember the first memory I had was we were in the house. Me and my brothers, we always played baseball in the house. We had this little space in the house where we have our little mini baseball game. It's 2-on-2. And my dad was probably about 5 feet away from me. And he was just throwing it as hard as he can. And, I was frustrated because I couldn't hit it. It was so fast. But it kind of gave me motivation to do it, like to want to, get to a point where I can hit it. And it's kind of made me a better person. Sometimes just when you don't do something the first time, doesn't mean that you quit. You just keep on doing it until you can. So that's probably the first memory from when my dad has introduced me to baseball. But always through the house, me and my brothers would just be playing baseball all day, every day. And if it wasn't baseball, we'd be playing basketball. And if it wasn't basketball, we'd be throwing the football around. So we were very active kids.
Hey, you mentioned throwing the football around. I was curious, do you or have you played any other sports outside of baseball, or is this your singular focus?
Of course. I played probably every sport, soccer, football, baseball. I've tried probably everything. But, those sports never stick with me because, I love baseball so much. And I did love those other sports. I enjoyed it. But for me, I just didn't want to jeopardize anything that was going on in baseball. So I just had to, put that down. Because I say I get hurt in basketball, I'm going to be mad because I can't play in baseball season. So it was just – I just put everything down and focus on baseball. So that was my thing.
So yours was actually a house where it was encouraged to play ball in the house. Normally that's like, don't play ball in the house, but.
Well, I mean, of course my mom and my dad didn't like it because it would be, rough up some things, but you can't stop us. They couldn't stop all four of us, especially we just love to play it so much. So They just had to deal with it. And if we messed up anything in the house, we'll just have to suffer the consequences.
At a certain point in time, you realize that you had them 4-on-2. So, you know.
Exactly. 4-on-2, exactly. They can't get all of us. It might be some of us, but they can't get all of us.
It's one of those parenting things that once you have more than two kids and you know both parents are there, then you go from playing man to man to zone
defense. Exactly.
That's all you could do.
Exactly. So,
well, I wanted to ask a little bit about some of the Major League Baseball initiatives that we'll get back to, because I'm going to talk about. I think there's going to be a whole generation of people now who dads are going to start throwing as hard as they can from 5 feet away, because clearly that taught you how to hit. But I wanted to ask you about the impact that some of the Major League Baseball initiatives have had on your baseball development, on being seen. We touched on it a little. I think Harold asked you about it on the network show, but the amount of different programs that you've been able to participate in, the Atlanta Braves RBI program, the Elite Developmental Invitational, yeah. Which is now the Hank Aaron Invitational, the Breakthrough Series, the Dream Series, over the years, you've done the Breakthrough Series a few times. Mm-hmm. What have those opportunities afforded you? And do you think that, obviously Georgia baseball now is red hot, especially this year. I think there's just so much talent there, but like, how much do you think that's impacted how much you've been seen and led to things like playing, in Denver last summer?
Well, for one, I get nothing but great memories from being part of those events, RBI to Breakthrough Series to Hank Aaron to Dream Series. Just being a part of those events has taught me a lot about me as a player, and it's given me more motivation to get where I want to go. Just watching how LaTroy Hawkins and Marquise Grissom or instructors like that, Ron Washington, just watching how they go about everything and how they want to teach me how to go about everything. It's gave me a sense of happiness of, it's more of me like out there. And for sure, it's just been amazing. They've given me a lot, built relationships. I feel like, without getting seen through Breakthrough Series, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. And I thank them for everything. They've took me under their wing, and they've taught me how to be a better person, better player. And, they've always been room for me, and I appreciate them for that.
Let me follow up on that just quickly, because obviously this is something that Major League Baseball, has not done well over the years and is trying to do better just in terms of bringing, more young black players to the sport, some say who've been around for a while, back to the sport. How much do you see that as being, an important part of the game, and how much are you looking forward to once you, assuming everything goes well and you begin your pro career, even if it's after college, being able to help be an ambassador to communities that maybe have been underserved and underutilized by baseball?
I definitely want to give back. That's been my only thing, baseball isn't forever. And, just seeing how Breakthrough Series and how they go about everything and how they want to give back. And I want to do that because I know how important it is. I know how important it was for me, and I know how important it is for kids in the future. So, every chance, even now, every chance just to go to a clinic and help out some 9-year-olds or, help out my brother in a couple clinics or just go meet a couple kids. Those go a long way. And, whenever baseball's over, I definitely want to give back, whether it's make my own thing or, do Breakthrough Series and do all the other camps that are yet to be made.
Tomorrow, we are recording this on a Tuesday morning, and I know that when we set this up, there was question about whether we'd be able to make it work because it was during a school day, and I know that is something that you take very seriously. If I'm not mistaken, you have a, what is it? I don't know what exactly it is now, but a
4.3.
Yeah, well, 4.3 GPA. Yep. And I know, you know, one of your brothers is working on a master's degree at Georgia Tech. Is that correct?
He has his master's degree. He graduated last year.
Wow. Okay. Well, as a matter of fact, we have a guest that we wanted to bring on here, a bit of a surprise for you. We actually have your brother, Trevant, who we wanted to bring on and add a little extra perspective here for us.
What up, bud?
Can you hear me?
Hey,
what's
there.
What's up, bro?
How you doing?
Good, hey, Trevant. Thanks very much for taking some time out to join us here today. We know you've got a lot of things going on, but we have been talking to Tamar already quite a bit about how much his family is involved and has been involved in getting him to the point where he is now. I would imagine you have to be extremely proud.
Yeah, man. I'm very proud of him for a number of things. It's not easy being the youngest of four boys. And also being the youngest of four boys, he has taken that his position of being the youngest and turned into, I guess, quote unquote, I'm being on top now. Finna walk across the stage in June to be a top draft pick. So that's very exciting for him.
Sorry, I got very excited there. I'm glad that you're here with us. This is Jonathan Mayo. I appreciate you coming on. I wanted to ask you from your vantage point, you know, when did the brothers realize, I guess it's, you know, sort of two part. When did you realize that Tamar was the best baseball player of the four of you? And how long after that did you wait to tell him that you knew?
It's funny. I didn't think he was the best player until I stopped playing because we're in the same competition. I knew at Sandtown Park at 6 years old, my brother Tavell, who's not at Georgia Tech, was playing 7 to 8 year old baseball. And Tamar came up and played up and put him in left field. And he caught a diving catch, diving from behind the fence at 6 years old. And he got up, then showboat, ran in and was serious. And I was confused on why he didn't just understand what he just did. And he kept doing that as the years playing up with Tavell, doing that and surprising every once in a while. And like, you just knew that he had it. Like, you didn't know what it was at that point, being young as well as him. But I mean, like, you just knew that he had a summer or worry about himself.
So that's one of your first memories of Tamar showing what he had and that he was a special talent. Do you have any particular moments, maybe a little later on, anything that you've seen him do that has just stunned you or made you realize he's the real deal?
Natural showcase. I had a, I was a good player, but I had a problem showing up on the big stage when you only have those eyes on looking at you that one time. He was doing good last year playing up, but natural showcase, I just didn't know what was going to do at that big stage and everything, to the point that I didn't even follow the national showcase. Then I get on Twitter and I see him blasting balls at the catwalk and everything. Then I realize that I'm missing something good. Then I hear that he's a home run that next day and everything. After that, I just knew the rest was history, because that was for real for me.
So you were so nervous about him being on the big stage that you couldn't bear to watch.
Yeah, I couldn't bear to watch. No, sir.
Tamar, I know that, I mean, you know, it sounds like, you know, as we've talked about, your whole family has impacted you. I know with Trevant, you sort of model your game after him, and you also train with him a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the impact of having, you know, an older brother who you've been able to sort of model your game after, and also just kind of the way he's gone about his post baseball playing business is probably something that's impacted you as well.
Well, for sure. For one, Trevant knows this. My game is his game. We're literally the same person when we get on the baseball field, and I got it from him. So definitely he's just showed me how to, you know, be a good baseball player, because he was a good baseball player. And seeing how he goes about everything now just gives me motivation to, you know, when I'm done playing, you know, make an impact on kids. because I know how important it is to me for him to be training me and, you know, be in the cage every day and helping me out on the field and just helping me with the little things. So I it gives me motivation to just do that. And I appreciate that. Because without him, you know, probably would be, I don't know where I would be. You know, I'd just be, I wouldn't have the motivation or I wouldn't have that support system that I have now to make me a better player.
All right, Trevon, now's the time that you can sort of spill the tea. And, you know, are there times where you've had to sort of get on Tamar? I get the sense that Tamar shows up pretty much every time, but have there been times where, as the older brother, you have to take him to task to make sure he's getting his work in?
I never had to take him to task to get his work in. We do get into his heated discussion and arguments. For example, we got in one last week, just leaving the cage, and we outside in the dark at 6 o'clock from like 7 o'clock, just talking about hitting, talking about life in general. Like people are walking by, and we don't even mind people any business because we just going at it, trying to figure things out because we understand what he wants to do, and we understand the magnitude of what it takes. And it's bigger than a draft spot in June or July, whatever the TBA decides. It's bigger than that. His goal is to be, he tells you guys always, to be a Hall of Famer and to play for a very long time. There's a certain type of a way that you got to go about it that I didn't understand until I put my cleats down. And now that I get it, I'm trying to dispel that to him and all my brothers so they aren't like me. Because they don't have to go through what I went through trying to figure it out because they see what happens when you don't do certain things to get to where it's towards your goal and everything.
Hey, guys, I know, you know, Tamar, you have not committed to a college program, and it seems highly likely that that may not end up being anything that you have to be concerned with. But with Trevon, a volunteer coach at Georgia Tech, and Tervell playing at Georgia Tech, are we getting any pressure there? Are we getting any recruiting from the brothers?
They definitely do not try to invade in those things, because at the end of the day, it's my decision. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it would be cool to play with them and stuff like that, but you know, it has to be a great fit for me. That's be a great fit for me at the end of the day. And, you know, if the shoe fits, then, you know, definitely going to wear it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it just has to be a great fit for me. So they don't try to invade it or anything like that or try to do any extra recruiting. They know at the end of the day it's going to be about me and if it's a good fit for me. And they understand if it's not a good fit for me, then it just wouldn't happen.
I guess, Tamar, for me, the sort of follow-up to what I asked your brother is, you know, when did you realize that you were the best brother? Or is that something that you kind of keep to yourself? Maybe you believe Tamar was better than you until he put his cleats down.
Well, ever since I was a kid, I thought I was the best brother. You know, got to have that confidence when you're in a house full of four boys and you were doing competitions of who's going to hit the most home runs or stolen bases or the less errors. So you had, me, honestly, you always had to have that confidence that I'm the best in the house and I'm going to beat you out and everything like that. But, honestly for me, me as just being one of the better players, I kind of figured that out when I was, 13, you know, playing with, trying to try out for the 15U national team. I was scared. I didn't know how good I was, and I wasn't playing like how good I was. And got a hit versus Luke Lito. You guys might know him. He was throwing about 92 that day, and that was the first time I saw 90, and I got a hit the first pitch that he threw to me. And I was like, wow, I could probably do this for a long time. And I was happy from there on out, and just gave me the confidence.
Yeah, bat speed has not been a problem from what I've seen from you, Tamar. So you learned that at age 13, evidently.
Yeah, I learned that at age 13. I mean, I feel like I playing with a bunch of 13-year-olds, you know, you can get away with it with a drop five and stuff like that. But once you start swinging the big boy bats, you really don't know how good you are. But I, you know, got kind of gained the confidence when you when I got down to USA.
Actually, I have a non-baseball question for both of you, because you know it sounds like it was, you know, a lot of sports a lot of the time, which makes some sense with four boys, all of whom played sports. But like, what does the Johnson family do? What do the Johnson brothers do when they're not playing baseball or whatever sport?
You want to answer that question, Tavon?
Playing baseball.
playing baseball.
If it's on the game, if it's playing in the house, we're too old to play in the house now, but it was playing the house, playing the game. If it was playing the cage, it's just baseball. Because, I mean, I don't know. It just baseball just did something to us, and we just stuck with it and just stuck onto it. And I say it to everybody that tomorrow is just a link on a long chain who very aware of his calling and what he does. And that's why he is who he is. It's not by mistake. It's not by luck or chance. Like he's really in tune with what he's doing. And that's what makes him so special. And that's the part that people can't explain. And that's what I'm verbalizing.
So it's all baseball all the time in the Johnson house. Hey, Jamar, wanted to ask you, you know, several of the, you mentioned getting a hit off of Luke Lito at 92. First time you'd seen 90. Looking at this top 100 draft prospects list, there is a ton of high school talent from Georgia. And I know a lot of these guys. We talked already about Drew Jones. Dylan Lesko is the top pitching prospect on the list. He's from Buford. There are a number of other players from the Georgia high school ranks on this list. I don't know, Hayden Murphy, Jared Jones, RJ Austin, who I know you know quite well. How about a quick scouting report on a few of these guys? Drew Jones, what's your take on him?
Drew Jones, athletic, high ceiling, you know, definitely has time to grow in his frame, but already a great player, great attitude. Can hit at a high level, can play at a high level. Best defensive shortstop I've ever seen. Has, you know, took away some of my hits, which I don't like, but, you know, he's if it's anybody, it's going to be Drew. RJ, once again, very, very athletic. Has a good sense of what he's doing. Can hit at a high level, can play at a high level. You know, plays the game very fast, you know, plays on his own kind of time clock, and, you know, could definitely be an all-star in the big leagues. Dylan has some of the best control I've seen in a high school pitcher. You know, I always follow high school pitchers even since I was 10 years old. So Dylan has some of the best control I've seen out of a high school pitcher. One of the best changeups I've seen of a high school pitcher. Fastball gives a lot of swing and miss and knows how to locate it very well, and has a good attitude on the mound.
All right, there you have some first-hand scouting reports from one of the best, if not the best, draft prospect in the 2022 class on some of the other top draft prospects in the 2022 class.
I wanted to finish up asking both of you, sort of, you know, we're recording this a few days shy of Christmas, and I'm curious. I can't imagine, you know, I have two kids. They're older now. One boy, one girl. I can't imagine a household of four boys that at any holiday time. So your parents clearly should be nominated for sainthood. But I'm just curious from both of you, what is the holiday time like in the Johnson house?
Could be very chaotic for one, because everybody's coming home and everybody's excited to see each other. You know, the arguments start to come back and everything like that. You know, my Travell, his birthday was yesterday, so we're celebrating his birthday also. And it's very fun, you know, where everybody's mom's trying to cook cakes and cook holiday dinner, grandparents are coming down and spend time with us, and we're just enjoying each other's time. So that's the great thing about us. We're just having fun. And you know, Mom does a good job of trying to get everything that we want every year, and it's just a fun time.
I guess the last thing I want to ask, because you know, all four of you, it's, you know, what, Tamar, Trevant, Terenz, and Travell. It's all. Did I get all four? Did I miss somebody?
Yeah, that's all four.
All right, it's all terror. Is that like? Does it come from Terry? Is it like all variations of a theme there? Can you explain that?
Yeah, it's all T-E-R comes from our father Terry, and my mom and my grandmother just made a combination of Trevant, Terenz, Travell, Tamar. And the cool thing is that we realized that it says T-E-R and all our names have seven letters in them, if you guys didn't peep. So that's kind of unique too, that I don't know if our parents did it intentionally or not, but that's kind of cool though.
Well, guys, thanks so much for joining us. Happy holidays to you and your family. And Tamar, we very much look forward to watching you over the course of the next 7 or so months, and look forward to seeing your name when it comes draft time. Thanks very much.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you guys for doing this. I appreciate it.
And thank y'all, Jenner.
All right.
Thank y'all.
Yeah, thank you guys.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to look back at some of the breakout prospects from the 2021 season. We'll do that next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jonathan Mayo, and I'm Jason Ratliff, and we are going to now look back at a story that we did in January where we predicted a breakout prospect, a player on a team top 30 list who would have a breakout season in 2021. Jonathan, we're going to focus on your teams. There are some instances here where guys may have had good seasons or very good seasons, but didn't have the biggest breakout season of anyone in the system. But as far as identifying the player that would have the biggest breakout season, you went 1-for-10. Shame on you. Guru-ness.
I think it shows my willingness to admit that I was wrong more than anything. But sure, if you want to rip me for that, it as a sign of growth.
There are certainly some players here on your list of teams that had very good seasons. Could certainly say breakout seasons, but like we said, a guy who had a bigger breakout season. Let's talk about a couple of those. First, let's talk about the one that you nailed.
That I nailed. And it's funny because, you know, the Mariners, I predicted Nolwe Marte, who we got tons of questions about him, throughout 2020. He had a huge pro debut in 2019 in the Dominican Summer League. We hit 309. He slugged 511. He stole a bunch of bases. Like, really exciting. And then, of course, we didn't really see him. We were getting good reports of him, you know, as one of the youngest guys, if not the youngest guy at their alternate site. But he didn't play. So we didn't know. Now, he has since moved, you know, firmly and high up the top 100, and for good reason. And I paused for a second, by the way, because Cade Marlowe was like a, you know, college senior sign who had a big first full season. But because of Marte's age, I gave him the edge. He went to full season ball because, you know, he wasn't going to go to the complex league at this point. And then promptly went out and hit 17 homers and stole 23 bases in the low A West, playing for Modesto. Showed a good approach at the plate, you know, ended up with an 831 OPS, and then got bumped up to high A, and was only there for a handful of games, but actually performed pretty admirably there at 290, you know, over the 30 or so at-bats he had there, you know, all while playing shortstop. Now, I think he probably moves over to third when all said and done, but this was a guy who, you know, age for his level, expectations he met and maybe even exceeded them, which is why he's as high up on our top 100 as he is. So yeah, that's the one that I quote unquote nailed.
And then another one we want to focus on here, the Orioles. You back in January picked Gunnar Henderson to have a breakout season, and I think it's fair to say that he did.
Yeah, he had a very good year. Good power, 17 homers, 16 steals. He's a very exciting player. Started seeing some time at third base. Some of it is just because they have a bunch of guys like that. Some of it is he may be too big. He really stood out in low A. He had a 944 OPS, and he got bumped up to high A, where he struggled a little bit more, still good on base skills and things like that. But it seems unfair because he did have a very good year, and I could have very easily picked him just so you wouldn't have scolded me for getting so many wrong. But that's not how I roll. So I ended up picking Kyle Stowers, who kind of came out of nowhere in a lot of ways. He led the organization in total bases. He hit 27 homers. He even stole 8 bases along the way. And he started out the year in high A, moved pretty quickly up to double A, and slugged 560 in double A, made it up to triple A, and hit pretty well there. Went to the Arizona Fall League and then got shut down. He had some minor, nicks and bruises, that sort of thing. And they just said, you know what, he played 124 games during the course of the regular season. So he ended up being my breakout player just because he went from kind of no expectations to now being one of their, top 10 or so prospects in a very deep system.
So keep an eye out for that story. We will be both looking back at the 30 projections that were made back in January to see how those turned out, and also identifying the breakout prospect for each organization in 2021. All right, let us wrap up this podcast as we always do with a question from the mailbag. This one comes from the handle R Houset. R-H-O-U-S-E-T. She asks, MLB Pipeline seems to be high on Brock Jones. Is that consensus, or is he a polarizing prospect? Why is that?
Yeah, so I did some digging because I went and looked on a bunch of other lists, other sites that do early draft rankings, and he is a little bit all over the map. Baseball America, their college list, he's number 30. But on D1 Baseball, their college list, he's number 7. Perfect Game has him number 10 on their overall list. Fangraphs has him at 64. So he's kind of all over the map. Now, in terms of how we did our list, we kind of lined them up based on the information that we have, and then we send it out to feedback, and we sent it out to, I don't know, close to 60 or so scouting directors, national cross checkers, that sort of thing. And we didn't really move him from where we originally had him. There were a couple people who maybe liked Chase DeLauder, who we have at number 8, ahead of him, on the list, but that was really about it. So in terms of what we got from the scouting industry, there was a good amount of consensus that where we have him was about right. I think he's really, really interesting. This is a guy who went to Stanford to play 2 sports. He's from Northern California, spent a year playing football and baseball, and has since been focusing just on baseball. Had a really good year in 2021, hit 18 homers and stole 14 bases for Stanford, and that was really his first full year just focusing on baseball, and then showed off the tools for Team USA over the summer. It's a good power speed combination, but like I think he's got a good chance to hit. And the more reps he gets and the more focused he is on that, I think it's going to show up. He's obviously a premium athlete. You know, he can play a very good center field. He's a left-handed hitter. I guess at the one question mark, and maybe that's where the divergent opinions are, is him facing lefties. But I think his swing is short enough that he's going to be able to figure that out. He just hasn't faced that many because he hasn't played that much. But, you know, he's got to go out and have a good spring. But if he does, you know, in the Pac-12, then I think where we have him is right around, you know, where he is going to go.
All right. Well, thanks to R. Housett for that question. I checked out R. Housett's Twitter account, and R. Housett is the handle. The name is Just an Egg. And the description is in the description field is solely MLB Pipeline fan. So nice. We should take more questions from Just an Egg. Anyway, thanks to R. Housett for that question. Thanks very much to both Tamar Johnson and his brother Trevant for joining us on the show today. Really appreciate them joining us. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening, everybody. Happy holidays. We'll see you in the new year.